This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly sponsored by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. As a City supporter, we know you value delivery, and McDelivery is up there with the very best. You'll always be winning with McDelivery because just like Kevin De Bruyne, McDelivery puts your order right on a plate. So the only thing left to say is, are you in? Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered as well. So that ordering today means some tasty rewards for you tomorrow. Only via the app at participating restaurants, 18 plus, rewards registration required, points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. Sit down, nobody talk. Well, that's if you've got any breath left. A pulsating Anfield clash finishes level. How that's the case, I have no idea. It's your Liverpool review. I'm Amos Murphy.
I'm Joe Butterfield.
I'm Ollie Kirsch.
I'm Ollie McCool.
And this is the City Report Podcast.
It's here for good to win. It is a thrilling start for Manchester City. The fastest ever goal in an FA Cup final. 2023 is the City treble year. Champions of England, FA Cup winners, and now, Champions of Europe! Manchester City are kings of Europe! Now they have their triple crown!
Okay, everyone, deep breath in and out. I think that was probably... Was that? Oh, God, that was a nasty sound to start the podcast off with. But I think that's probably the best way to start the show after a game like that. By God, was that chaotic. Usual disclaimer, listeners were coming at you straight away. Well, not straight away, about an hour or so has passed since the full-time whistle in Merseyside. So your unfiltered, raw reaction is on its way. Stay exactly where you are over the next half an hour or so for our opinions. Ollie Kirsch, I want to start with you, and I want to do this for everyone, actually, to begin with. 60 seconds each person, immediate thoughts throughout the game, sort of like I said, unfiltered, raw reaction. What are you saying?
Firstly, that noise was a grunt of displeasure.
I'm glad we cleared that up.
We asked me to breathe in and breathe out. But all right, I'm just going to pull it up because I actually typed it out before in a miniature rant. Foden was isolated.
Bro's coming with bars already.
Foden was isolated. Haaland was isolated. Zero control in midfield. Horrible tempo. Poor counter attacks. Defensive mistakes, panic. Edison's head on Mars. Suboptimal subs. Alvarez couldn't cope with his position. At 1-0, we stepped backwards, and there's a lot more. But it was a plethora of issues today. We didn't play like ourselves whatsoever. We didn't get the best out of any of our players. Alvarez isn't suited to that left-wing position whatsoever. Listen, the guy's a striker, right? So you either play him up top with Haaland or, unfortunately, have to drop him to the bench. When it comes to these kind of games especially, that's... You know, really exposed the fact that he's just not a winger. I don't think the lineup was great either. It wasn't terrible. It wasn't a head loss kind of, oh my fucking God kind of moment. It was, you know, this isn't really what we wanted to see. So yeah, I've just given you a nice little list, and I'm sure we're going to go into some of those in a bit more detail, but a lot of things went wrong today.
Just teasing it a little bit. Ollie McCool, what have you got on the back of that?
I hate Anfield. I hate Liverpool. I hate Jurgen Klopp. I hope City get knocked out of the FA Cup if it means we have to play them again this season. Just what a miserable afternoon. I hate that ground so much, because every time, especially in the last few years, every time we've gone there, I've thought, yeah, go on, this is going to be it. City are going to win it. They should win. Everything is rooting for them. That team comes out. You see, Liverpool are playing embryos, as you said about them earlier, Amos. What an awful, awful afternoon. City's biggest win of the day was probably that bus diversion before the game, where they actually managed to get into the ground without having to pass the hordes of Liverpool fans who, for some reason, think standing outside in the freezing cold instead of being in the pub is a good idea. Just about sums up the afternoon. What a miserable, miserable state of affairs. But that's what happens when Manchester City take the trip over to Liverpool and go to Anfield, isn't it? Just so typical. Yeah. So typical.
Yeah. Two miserable synopsises to start off with. The perfect person to lighten the mood. Joe,
time for the ray of sunshine. I think it was, first off, we need to get someone to take that Ollie Kirsch rant and put Park Life behind it. That was unreal. I think before the game, I said that I would quite happily take a draw. And with the game having ended, I feel very much like that was exactly how I felt at the end. Like, I was more than happy taking a draw away from that game. I think the starting lineup didn't bother me at the time, and maybe it should have done. But I think when you saw Alvarez in the starting 11, we didn't think, oh, Alvarez will be playing left wing. We thought Alvarez will be playing as one of the 10s and Foden will be outright. And I said in the chat before that it feels like Gundogan on the right levels of overthinking from Pep, and it is just another case of Pep doing something odd at Anfield, and it's just I'm sick of it. And you know, seeing that even though I happily took a point, and after the performance that we put in, a point is absolutely fine. The fact that we gave up the goal that equalised it in the manner that we did, just through an absolute, you know, a once a season kind of error, and those errors always happen at Anfield, is just an absolute joke. And yeah, so overall, despite the fact that I would have happily taken a point, and in the end I happily did take a point, there is still a lot to be not happy with in that.
It's the sort of match that leaves you questioning your toxic relationship with football, because you're like, why on earth do we even bother putting ourselves through that? I was working at the same time, and the worst possible sort of day to be on shift, but just, it was just, I don't know, I feel like I need to go into a cryo chamber and just be left for about a year or so, and just be left to just, I don't know, fester. But yeah, it was an intriguing game. You can see why the neutrals absolutely love these matches, particularly City at Anfield, because we'll get on to the juju and we'll get on to all of that lovely business a bit later on. But Ollie, that first half, look, I'm going to try and play the optimistic one if I can, although the level is quite low, it has to be said, especially with this panel. But that first half was good but bad at the same time. Is that fair? Obviously, City go into the lead, fantastically worked goal, but my personal opinion anyway, it was good enough. If you're looking at sort of maybe the bare minimum, I think City probably, considering the way they set up, considering that it was Anfield, considering the atmosphere, etc., it was probably the bare minimum. We'll get onto the second half a bit later on, but I don't know. First half, good but bad at the same time. Sometimes maybe good, sometimes maybe shit.
No. First 20 minutes were good. First 20 minutes were good for me.
That's part of the first half, isn't it?
Okay, so half of the first half was good. Sometimes maybe good, sometimes maybe shit.
Well, exactly.
Yeah, the problem is that
you're proving the point.
We let ourselves down, because we did so much right in the first 20 minutes, in that we came into Anfield, we knew what the atmosphere would be like. We weren't cowed in the first 20 minutes. We settled into the game nicely. We played our own game. We controlled the midfield. We controlled the ball. It was great. We then scored. And what fucked me off, what really, really annoyed me, was that almost immediately following the goal, when you've got, you know, something you have to do at grounds like Anfield is you've got to silence the crowd. They were on mute when we went 1-0 up.
Yeah.
And I think they maybe saw the writing on the wall, the fans there, thinking, yeah, this is going to play out how it should play out. City have got a strong lineup out. Liverpool haven't. They're already 1-0 up. They're controlling the game. And what did City do? We stepped off. We stepped off. We sat back. Now, that isn't a problem in itself if you are then competent on the counter-attack, but we weren't. We were completely impotent. De Bruyne's passing was all over the shop. The one time he did find Haaland, Haaland perhaps didn't make the most of it in his little one-on-one duel with Van Dijk. And we invited the pressure that by the end of the first half set the tone for the beginning of the second half. I think to give up an advantage like that at Anfield, one goal, crowd on their knees, and having, you know, in a good place with regards to actually controlling the game. We talked before about death by a thousand cuts, and that's the way it looked like it was going to play out. To surrender all of that at 1-0, I think is criminal. Criminal. So I think what went wrong after the goal completely offset the good work that we did before the goal, and that is why I'm not even looking on the first half very fondly.
Okay, that's fair enough, because as is often the case, first halves often go by the wayside and second half sort of what leaves the imprint in your mind. But Ollie McCall, I don't know. I feel like you have to take the good with the bad at Anfield, and I personally wasn't too fond of that starting lineup. Hats off to Akanji. It's not a scapegoat on him. In fact, my best City lineup, it probably has him playing at right back instead of Kyle Walker, which I know a few of you have choice words to say about him as well. But no Ruben Diaz in that sort of game was just a bit weird, although it didn't necessarily cost City. He's just the guy who smells out danger. Anake can do that, of course. Akanji can do it. John Stones, we've seen it before. But he's just that's his gig, basically. But I think the biggest crime is, as Ollie mentioned there, Julian Alvarez. I mean, I feel sorry for him at this point, because he's being shoehorned into positions that are just not suited for him. And it's getting to, you can kind of see the confidence oozing out of him. This fella has won it all, bar the League Cup, by the age of, 23, 24. And you can just slowly but surely see his happiness for the game sort of disappear, because he's doing positions that aren't suited to him. And that was probably the biggest takeaway from that first half in terms of negatives.
Yeah, 100%. Alvarez just... I think we all kind of collectively went, what the fuck has he done that for, when the lineup came out? And I think we spent the entire first half going, what the fuck has he done that for, but aiming at Alvarez. He just didn't seem suited to this game. He never looked comfortable. He never looked like he had a feel for the game. And you can, and you know, I said it before, you can see the logic behind putting him in, you know, because he is so press heavy. He's really good in that sort of frontline position, in terms of, you know, trying to keep the ball turning over, trying to keep the ball in. But he just kept losing the ball, just looked a bit lost when he tried to get forward with it. It reminded me of when Pep's tried Gabriel Jesus out wide in the past, and it just, nothing seemed like it was really clicking for him in that game. That's the obvious flaw in this one for me. I don't know why you would put him, if you're going to play him, why you would put him out at left wing. You know, we've seen him in midfield this season and have good games in midfield, you know, much earlier in the season, of course, but we've seen him not excel, but do pretty well there. Maybe not Anfield well, clearly not Anfield well, but just, it just seemed a really, really weird selection in a massive game, a huge call by Pep, and he's completely got it wrong. But then again, one player doesn't absolve the others of their collective step back in this fixture. You know, De Bruyne, as we said, was completely lost. Foden had a bright first 10 minutes and faded. You know, for the first 10 minutes, I think City got four quite incisive attacks down Foden's side, where the only thing that was fluffed was the end, was the final pass or two. You know, and that's the sort of start you want at Anfield. You want to look bright, you want to look sharp, and then you want to get the goal, silence the crowd, and then you want to get the second, and then hope you can hold on to something like that. That's how City operate in all sorts of games, not just these huge events, but in all sorts of games. Their aim is to blitz them at the start, settle into the game themselves, get a goal, and then get a second, and then there's the game killed off. And it felt like City had an opportunity to do that, but as soon as City got their goal, they faded away completely. It's just really, it felt like such a missed opportunity. And then, you know, as soon as you give Liverpool an inch, they'll take a mile at Anfield. And then the crowd, you get the crowd revved up again, and that's it. City's heads just completely went after that. And that was obvious in the first half. You don't even need to look at the second half, which I'm sure we're going to. You don't need to look at the second half to see when City's head started to implode. A job... a job done by themselves. You know, they could have put themselves in a really good position and they just didn't. Whatever this mental funk is at this ground, I don't get it. I really don't get it at this point. You know, you manage to beat the Spurs curse and then the Anfield one just comes back and hits you even harder. Terrible. Yeah,
it's hilarious. I did think, you know, surely we're not going to win a treble, score a goal at Spurs, and then go and win a game at Anfield in the space of 12 months. It did feel a little bit too good to be true. And in the end, like I say, how City didn't drop points. Joe, just quickly, I mean, let's focus on probably the only positive from, in terms of, you know, an actual standout moment from the fixture, John Stones' goal. It's something that I think City, ironically, this season have been lacking in the set piece department. And lo and behold, on the biggest of stages so far this season, up steps at a moment of genius. And Gary Neville made a great point on the commentary. You know, this is something you plan. You can't. De Bruyne is great, but you can't send a message to John Stones through via the airwaves to say, you know what, mate, check your run, go near post, Nathan Ake, you block the player off. You know, it was clearly well executed and it had been worked on. But just a wonderful goal and a fantastic finish from John Stones, who continues to prove that there is nothing in football, seemingly, he can't do.
Yeah, it was obvious that they'd seen something in the build-up to this game that made them think that's something we can get at corners. And I think Ake played his part in that perfectly by sort of holding off McAllister. Bit weird of Neville to then sort of try and equate it to the Van Dijk League Cup final. I mean, the Van Dijk League Cup final thing was because he was offside, and you literally cannot be offside from a corner. So yeah, I'm not sure.
I think that the Liverpool goal that was disallowed was a shocker, and I think it has it has put it into the narrative, hasn't it? Of, you know, you block a player off at a set piece, it might be a foul, but it was ridiculous to bring it up.
It was mad to sort of bring it up. But yeah, Stones obviously, you know, the move was executed perfectly. I mean, Stones managed to get away from whoever it was that was marking him, and De Bruyne put it, you know, as they mentioned at halftime, to put like an outswinging ball from the corner, like still have it like that close to the goal line, like to the touchline is mad. That's what happens when you have a player like De Bruyne, who can, you can pretty much tell to put the ball absolutely anywhere. And he can just do it. And that's a lot of it. That's just a shame that goal was then followed by, I don't know, 25 minutes of the team just deciding that was job done. And then, you know, the second half, which we'll get into, but that was, yeah, it was good. It was a great moment. And obviously, like, you know, going in at halftime at 1-0, you kind of look at that and you can think if the team, because obviously even with a ropey end to the first half, you can think, well, the team might regroup at halftime, like Pep will get them in there and, you know, drill something into them at halftime.
Did you think City had to go in at above a one-goal margin, i.e. two-goal or three-goal, Joe? Because, I don't know, it felt at halftime, it was like, that was an opportunity. In the back of your head, you're thinking Liverpool aren't going to be this sloppy. City's biggest errors in the first half were self-inflicted, which obviously most errors usually are. But you know, Liverpool didn't really force City into anything. They had maybe one chance, I think it was, but other than that, they were kept quiet.
Yeah, there was the Conor Bradley shot that sort of was like the cross/shot that sort of went across our goal, and then there was the Luis Diaz shot from the edge of the area. But other than that, they didn't really. I think Szoboszlai had like a pretty decent header as well, like in the coming out. So they were sort of, there was nothing that was really properly clear cut. But like you say, the chances were kind of coming just from our errors. But I think when you go in 1-0 up at half time, the trick is, especially somewhere at Anfield where they're obviously so atmosphere dependent, and that atmosphere really plays into how the game is going to turn. You need to just keep it at 1-0 for as long as possible. And it takes us literally 2 minutes to just like chuck it away and just give away, give them a goal back, give the crowd like a reason to then immediately just start cheering for absolutely every 50-50 that Liverpool win, and just for cheering that anytime someone boots the ball out of play for a corner, like everyone just like the crowd are on it like they've scored a goal. Like we gave the Anfield atmosphere like the perfect fuel to the fire, really, by just shooting ourselves in the foot after 2 minutes, because one goal was never going to be enough. It never is going to be at Anfield, especially not with our defensive record this season. So it's just frustrating that, as in the first half, second half's main error comes from us rather than from them.
Yeah, which we'll get to after this short break. Listeners, stay exactly where you are. Join us in a moment.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The Etihad Stadium really is wonderful at this time of the season, and the same goes for McDelivery. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. Welcome back to the City Report podcast, your home for daily Manchester City content. The big podcasts keep coming, just like the big games. Can everyone just have a moment of silence for Alexis McAllister, who could have died had the ball not been in front of Doku's foot at the end? Listeners, if you haven't heard, Mr. Jurgen Klopp, who is obviously famed for his rational takes in post-match interviews, said that McAllister could have died, or he could have been killed. Sounds a little bit like another insufferable manager from the past. I'll leave that one with you. Ollie, what the fuck happened with that penalty? That's a question that I don't think I'll ever know. There's a bit of to and fro in the group chat in our debate, and sort of saying whose fault was it, who was to blame. This is how I looked at it anyway. Nathan Ake makes a poor pass. Absolute hospital ball, gets intercepted, fair play Darwin Núñez, sniffs out the danger and gets it. Edison comes charging out, and Ollie Kirsch, I don't know what he's trying to do. Can you sort of differ from that line of thinking? Because I don't know what he's trying to do. The ball looks like it's going to be run out of play. If not, Núñez scores one of the best goals of all time from an impossible angle, or alternatively sets up a teammate in the middle. Edison just goes straight through him. It was clueless.
It's stupidity. It's plain stupidity. Yeah. The thing is, with a keeper like Edison, right, you have to... If you want a goalkeeper who is on the border of insane, I think Eddie, by nature and the way he plays, it's a prerequisite to be a little bit of a lunatic to pull off half of the stuff he does. And the consequence of that is that occasionally you will get moments like this. He loves to go flying in. Most of the time he gets there. When he doesn't, it's catastrophic. But it was stupid. It's the stupidity I can't get my head around. If he had closed Núñez down, acting as the last man, which is fine, tried to cut out the angle and just held his feet, Núñez is probably running that ball out of play. The fact that he's made a conscious decision to go for a ball that was practically on the touchline by the time Edison got anywhere near where it was at Núñez's feet is just stupidity. I don't know what he was thinking. Baffled. I don't know.
Yeah.
But like I said, when you have a keeper that's got a screw or two loose, you get a lot of great moments from him, and he is integral to the way we play with recycling possession around the back. But you will very occasionally get those kind of incidents. And it's not the first. We've seen it once or twice this season. We see it 2-3 times every season where he has a moment that where he could concede a penalty or get sent off. That's Eddie. It happens. Yes, Ake has some responsibility, but I mean, if Edison doesn't make that challenge, then you've got one or two moments still to prevent that ball ending up in the back of the net. And Edison just kind of gave Liverpool the shortest route to a goal from there, didn't he?
I think it's just stupid. I think my thing with that penalty is that if that's a real, like, genuine, he's literally millimeters from the ball and he happens to have taken Núñez out, but it's one of them where it's like it's there to be won.
It wasn't there.
I'm not too fussed about that penalty being given away, but it was literally like the ball had already gone by the time he begins to like cock his foot back to kick it.
It was on FIFA when you play a lags and then suddenly like the ball's disappeared and they've just wiped out someone. It was madness.
I can understand. Don't get me wrong. I think in our chat we had a few people saying that it was on Ake, and I think the pass is ultimately what creates the problem to be attempted to be solved by Edison. But the fact is there was so much time for Edison to choose what he was going to do there. And the fact that he chose to do the stupidest thing and that got him sent. I mean, they also got him injured as well. Let's not forget. Like that's not, yeah. it's not like he's, oh, sorry. Is he not injured? Is that that a thing?
He is injured. Well, he looks injured. It is absolute crazy. What he's thinking. Ollie, I want to move on though. There's a few talking points that we've got to touch on. Kevin De Bruyne, Pep, being one of them. McCall, what is it about Anfield? Because look, we're saying this having City drawn 1-1, and that 20 minutes after they scored the penalty, which in fairness to Edison, he comes close to saving. It's a great penalty. Different story if he saves it. You know, who knows what happens. But at the same time, how on earth Liverpool didn't score in that 20 minutes to make it 2-1? Again, mind blown.
Well, much like Liverpool after that penalty, much like City in that first half, there's very little that's incisive that I can add to this, to be quite honest. I just found watching that second half, and I'll be honest, I missed a few parts of it, but you know what I saw of it, I'm just thinking that both of those managers must have been absolutely fuming with their players. I mean, City just shut down, essentially. They looked lackadaisical. They looked uninterested. They looked bored. They looked, you know, they looked like me when someone starts talking about Arsenal or Manchester United, just uninterested completely. But in terms of Liverpool, you're just thinking, are you actually trying to, you know, let City get back into this game here? Because it felt like that at times with some of their chances. And City haven't been great defensively this season. Every single team I bet in their pre-match meetings about Manchester City are going, bully their defenders. They'll give in eventually. Their clean sheet record is poor this season. Just keep going. You'll get there. And Liverpool, you know, they just never really, they haven't looked like the team that we've seen just scoring goals for fun in the past few weeks. But at the same time, you know, come to later in that second half, they were absolutely battering City. They were tearing through. And you just think, all it's going to take is one chance here and that'll be it. And then you see some of the finishes that City were getting away with, especially after the substitutes. I mean, the one where it comes off Kevin Kelleher into Phil Foden's arm or face or shoulder or whatever, and then off the bar. Then Doku hits the inside of the post and the ball just suddenly flies back out into the keeper's hands. That's the Anfield curse right there. That is pure Anfield curse right there. And, you know, and people could say, oh, but we won there in COVID without fans. Anfield, it doesn't matter. Because the problem is you give those fans, it's like lighting the touch paper. You let that crowd get a bit riled up and they're just going to stay on top of you. That's how Liverpool have always managed the big European nights. You know, everyone remembers what happened to us there in 2018. Everyone remembers corner taken quickly versus Barcelona. Yeah, yeah, yeah. How many times have we gone to Anfield and just seen the game taken away from us by, you know, that Jurgen Klopp revving up that crowd? You know, even if it finished 1-1, even if Liverpool had a poor, you know, half in terms of finishing, even if City just fell away, there's still just something in that crowd that just never stopped in that second half. And it's really, really bloody annoying because it feels like 2 points dropped. You know, what could be, what you could see is a point gained. It feels like 2 points dropped because City just completely fell out of the game at that point after that penalty. And now we've got an injured goalkeeper, which is just magnificent. You know, you're getting towards a fully fit squad and then your two left wingers go down and now you've got an injured goalkeeper. Magic. Thank you, Anfield.
I'm not having a word of that. Not having it. I'm sorry. This Anfield hoodoo go. Juju voodoo,
the Anfield
whatever
denier.
You want to call it.
Of course, it's no, a conspiracy I'm not having it. I'm not having it.
Have you got your Anfield vax?
Right. I will accept this kind of talk if we had gone in, you know, up against the full strength Liverpool in.
But that's the point.
Hang on. What? One sec. The atmosphere can be the 12th man. Any home atmosphere can be the 12th man. That's fine. But we were by far and away the superior team going into that game, on paper with the lineups. We had control of the game, as I was saying before. At 1-0, we had the crowd silenced. It wasn't a fucking red seat that took Darwin Nunes out, right? It wasn't a red seat that was you know, punting the ball up top every time we got hold of it. It wasn't a red seat that was misplacing Kevin De Bruyne's passes on the break. This is on the team, and I just will not accept this as an excuse this time.
Hang on.
It's in the head. To quote the Cranberries, right. It's in the head.
Okay, fine, right. But these players, Julian Alvarez has played in a World Cup final.
He's played
a World
in
Cup
Boca
semi-final.
Versus River
Most
games.
Of these, he, but right, exactly,
this
exactly.
Is what we're
Hang
saying.
On, Amos. Yeah, but the point is that this shouldn't be a problem for these players. What I'm not doing is going to say, oh, yeah, but it's Anfield, so we can kind of let it slide a little bit. No, we've gone in with a better team. We've gone in with momentum from our last few games. We've gone in, we've taken the lead, we've silenced the crowd. And we've gone in with a team of players who've played in Champions League finals, who've played in games where a treble is on the line, who've played in games where a World Cup is on the line.
I'll throw it over to Joe because I want to make sure we have chats and everyone gets a say in here. But Joe, I just feel like that is the point. You could throw out 11 giraffes and you could throw out 11 red seats and they'd still find a way. And we can sit here and we can say Julian Alvarez has played in Super Clasicos, Erling Haaland has scored 50-odd goals a season, you know, Ruben Diaz, even though he didn't play. You get the point that Ollie was making. I do take that point. I think it is silly, but that's kind of, that's the question, isn't it, Joe? Why is it that these superb, incredible, wonderful players, whenever they step inside that stadium in Merseyside, just go to shit?
I absolutely fully understand what Ollie's saying there, but I think that's the point. Like the point is that we're in a position where every single player on that pitch, probably man for man with the exception of maybe Virgil van Dijk, is a better person than the person on the opposite team, and yet we've somehow found a way to lose no matter what. Like that's the kind of, I completely agree. I think it's on the players, but I think it's on the players because it's in their heads. And I think it's in their heads because it's in Pep's head. I think we've seen from, you know, we saw from the lineup, like obviously doing what is effectively an experiment at this point, like putting Alvarez out left, like that is a Pep doesn't do that anywhere but Anfield kind of thing. Like that's a he respects what Liverpool are too much to do his normal thing. And that in itself transmits to the players and makes them think of Anfield as this kind of like this holy grail of football that we cannot. But I do think, I don't think it's anything as silly as like a curse or anything like that. But I do think players and teams have mental blocks when it comes to stadiums. Like we won our first, we scored our first goal at the Spurs ground like not long ago. Like, and we've had like 200 shots in the process of getting.
Still
to
haven't
that
done
point.
It in the Premier League as well,
and we still haven't done it in the Premier League exactly. And those mental blocks very much can exist, and I think that we definitely have one at Anfield because if there's been a crowd in that stadium, we just no matter what team we put out, no matter what team they put out, no matter what form we're in, no matter what form they're in, no matter whether they're having one of the worst seasons in Klopp's entire time, like they did last season, and we're playing a back four that has, you know, João Cancelo and Akanji as the fullbacks. Like, you know what I mean? Like we're just not winning. We're just not winning games at these stadiums, that's the frustration of it. But I can obviously take the point that you can put logical reasons behind each individual game, but if that happens 10 times in a row, then you've got to start looking at it and thinking, what is it?
Yeah, just a deep breath, as Amos said in an hour earlier.
Deep grunt.
Wrap up my point. My point is that we shouldn't find it any more acceptable to drop points at Anfield than we would at perhaps the Emirates or Old Trafford or Stamford Bridge just because it's Anfield. I understand that Liverpool get a psychological edge in some sense playing at home. I understand there may be a psychological deficit for us playing away at Anfield, but it's still unacceptable for these players who are playing under such an established footballing system as an established unit with the experiences that they have in the biggest games football has to offer, that is, you know, the criticism is on them rather than shrugging and saying, well, it's Anfield and, you know, we have a bit of hoodoo there. It's on the players to get around that. The fact that we couldn't go and impose ourselves and impose our game isn't because it's Anfield. It's because the players are, for one reason or another, unable to shake that. And at this level, with a game with the stakes this high, they absolutely should be able to shake that. So that's my point on this.
Is that in itself not an Anfield effect, though? Like, is the players feeling like that not the Anfield effect?
I don't think it's a benefit of Anfield to Liverpool against us. I think it's a failure on the part of the City management and the City players.
I agree. Fair. I think we're kind of coming to the same point, but from different avenues here. And I think everyone can say it's probably borderline pathetic that City have done everything in football, pretty much everything, including scoring at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, albeit not in the Premier League, but they've still not won a game at Anfield with fans. You know, it is, and Guardiola won't get to do that now, against Klopp at least. That's done. That is the one thing that you can hold against him. Not that it really matters that much. But at the same time, I think you just have to almost, I don't know, you kind of have to recognise the emotional side of the game and say that these things exist. And I would have, the only criticism that I think we can really throw at Guardiola as a genuine one in terms of his time at City is that there is a touch of overthinking. But then again, playing John Stones as a hybrid defender midfielder is overthinking. Throwing out four centre-halves to win the treble is overthinking. Again, you run with the rough and the smooth in these situations, but I would have just loved at one point against Klopp at Anfield, City just go out with their guys, the best players in the best positions, and we don't end up having to make a substitution where Kovacic comes on. And for my money, was probably from a City perspective, man of the match, and he only played, what, half an hour or so. I think Doku's got a shout for that as well. And sort of need a player to control it, having taken off one of the best midfielders of all time. I don't know, it is weird. I think we can all agree it's weird. It's on the players to change it, but my two cents, sometimes in football, those things exist. And it's weird and no one knows why, but that's the case. Ollie, Ollie McCool, I want to quickly, before we start to wrap up and we have a big hug and we all go home as friends, I want to talk about that Kevin De Bruyne incident because, look, by the time the players would have got back to the CFA or they're in training, you know, whenever it is, it had been forgotten about, and that's football. But we haven't really seen that from Kev, have we? Bar the sort of against Liverpool, ironically, maybe it is Liverpool that gets it out of him in the Champions League, sort of going down the tunnel. He had a little bit of a spat in 2018, but coming off the pitch, you can see why he was pissed off, but he wasn't having a great game, and it was a bit weird to see him react like that.
Yeah, I mean, I've never thought Kevin De Bruyne to be the type to get pissy and to try and be annoyed about a substitution. We don't know if that's why, if he was pissed off at being substituted himself or if it was some other reason. But then it was the shot of Pep going to the bench to talk to him that was a bit like, oh, that's very weird. We've seen, I don't think there's ever been a player who hasn't had a tantrum coming off the pitch when they think they should still be on it or, you know, for whatever reason. We've always seen that players and managers having a little bit of a disagreement as they come off. But a manager going to the player on the bench during the game, I don't think I've ever seen that before. Yeah. Definitely not under Guardiola. Definitely not with Kevin De Bruyne. So that was, you'd love to just know what was going on there. You know, was it just he was pissed to be subbed off? Was it something tactical? Was it, you know, something else? We'll never know, but it's just one of those strange things. I mean, this is the thing with, I think people like Guardiola and like De Bruyne, they're such perfectionists. They're people who carry the weight of this club on their shoulders. And, you know, it takes a toll on them. You know, we've seen Guardiola, after games like this before, really look down and defeated in press conferences. You know, we've seen how many times in the Champions League have we seen Kevin De Bruyne coming out and doing the post-match interview going, different year, same shit. You know, and it's felt like that at Anfield many times. You know, maybe it's all calmed down by this point, you know, 8:30 on Sunday night. And I'm sure tomorrow morning, come recovery, training, whatever, there'll be nothing there and it'll be forgotten about by midweek. But it's just one of those very strange incidents that just kind of almost taps you into the mind of a footballer and a manager going and their relationship and thinking, maybe it's not as, maybe there's something a little bit here. And, you know, this is something we'll only find out maybe 3 or 4 weeks from now down the line, if they're still arguing when, you know, De Bruyne is coming off the pitch, or if there's still something else, or if there's a headline in a newspaper or online or something like that. You know, maybe there'll be a bit more to it. but it's just one of, it's you don't want to make it a talking point, but at the same time, it's so strange that it almost becomes one in itself. But
it feels that way, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It feels that way that we're maybe going to have to, I don't know. That relationship has been sort of, look, go back to the Newcastle game, the embrace they had after that in the sort of the final few minutes when Kev turned it around. You don't want to see it sort of souring over, but does Kevin De Bruyne play less football for City going forward, given his age, given his fitness? Maybe that's the case. It's something they'll have to work out. And by that, I mean, does he play the lesser game, so to speak, so he can be fit and firing for the bigger ones? I don't know. It's a dynamic that will be spoken about. Quickly, yes or no answer. I want to keep it brief. Ollie Kirsch, Doku, should he have given away a penalty?
Yes.
There we go. Joe?
Yes.
Ollie McCall?
Yeah, that was a penalty.
Like a good old-fashioned X-Factor panel, it's four yeses. I feel like that was an absolutely wild decision how it didn't get given. Probably one of those where if it's given on the pitch, then it obviously doesn't get overturned. But the fact that there was no quote-unquote clear and obvious error. I wanted to, obviously it's been a roller coaster podcast, a little bit like the game, but Ollie Kirsch, I wanted to wrap on a almost just looking at title race and not necessarily going into in-depth numbers, who've got who in the running. But with 10 games out, do you think City go on and win it?
Unsure. I think it's too early.
That's unusual for you, it has to be said. I think, was it the Arsenal game last year in February when there was still a bit of a few points to play for? You're like, no, City go and do it, City go and do it. It does feel like it is more finely balanced than probably ever before.
Yeah, I think it's the three-horse thing that's throwing me a little bit. There's another variable in there this time, whereas after the Arsenal game, we had the momentum. It was their first title race in years and years and years. And we'd been there and done it, whereas Liverpool have done it, obviously in 2020. Arsenal are back again this year. We don't look as consistent as usual in our post-Christmas demonic run. So, there's just way too many variables going on here. If we'd lost, I probably would have said we're not going to win it. If we'd won, I might have said we now have the momentum to at least clear the Liverpool hurdle. But having drawn in the way it's poised now, I think it's come back to me in a 4 or 5 weeks type situation.
The most interesting part, obviously, it will be brought up nearer the time and after the fact, depending on the result. But City now have to beat Arsenal, but at the same time, that hands Liverpool the initiative in terms of if they continue to win their matches, of course. So there's going to be plenty of twists and turns. But Joe, I felt, and I know you did the same, going into the game, and let's try and finish on a positive note, but City couldn't afford to lose that game. Whatever the case, if City lost that game, I think we'd have all been coming on here saying, done and dusted, we're finished, title, Arsenal, Liverpool, blah, blah, blah. By somehow not losing it, it feels like there is still a door open, and it's going to take a lot. It's going to take almost impeccable form, but City still have a strong chance.
Yeah, not like losing would have been much, much worse, and it looked for a long time as if that was absolutely going to happen. Like, I was fully braced for a defeat, especially given how the second half was going for, well, pretty much the whole second half. Like, as soon as we conceded, like, it was just a barrage for 40, 45 minutes. I just feel like, I think if we'd have put in a properly solid performance against Liverpool and come out as, like, heroic, like, with a heroic draw, I'd be like, yeah, like, this team's got what it takes. But that performance was pretty shocking, and we've not looked great in the big games against the big teams this season. I'm not feeling too confident, even though it's at the Etihad. I'm not feeling too confident about the Arsenal. If anything, I know that I said before the game that we just have to not lose, but I think the manner in which we've somehow not lost has not really given me much confidence. So I'm really sorry to ruin your positive spin that you wanted to, the positive note that you wanted for the end of this podcast. But yeah, I'm not feeling great. If I had to say yes or no at the moment, I would say no on City winning the title.
Ollie, that's a bold one. Ollie McCall, we were so close to seeing Jeremy Docky do the gritty in front of the cop. Maybe it isn't meant to be our year, because I think that would have topped the treble. But give me some. Go on. Why can we be positive after that game? It's a tough ask for you, but it's not in City's hands, but you would possibly say Liverpool don't win 10 games in a row. Maybe they do, but considering the way they've been playing apart from the game against City, you would expect somewhere down the line their luck runs out. Maybe it doesn't. Maybe this is going to be Klopp's farewell. They win the title. Sorry to say it, but it's a possibility. However, you have to be confident because City are the only team who have been in this position in terms of winning a title race. When Liverpool won it, it was by 18 odd, 20 odd points, whatever it was. You know, City have got the experience, they've got the minerals. Why can't they go and do it again?
City like being the hunters. City True. Like being the hunters. I mean, I came on this podcast a few weeks ago and said, you know, I think it was before the United, a little while before the United game, maybe even before the Luton game, and I said, City are going to win the next six. And they're going to progress in all competitions and they'll be absolutely fine. Well, you know, they've stopped after this is the third of those six and they've drawn. You know, you beat Arsenal. And, you know, I think if we can go into the international break with a win against Newcastle, having progressed in the FA Cup, then come back and win against Arsenal at the Etihad, which, to be honest, I've got full faith in us doing regardless, because I just think City are unbeaten at the Etihad. They've got a great record there. And I think I just think they're going to be well up for it. They enjoy being the hunters. They love it. And, you know, they're not going to be reeling from this like a defeat. They'll be annoyed. They'll be angry. Mm. But come a couple of weeks, that'll have kind of faded. They'll be thinking, no, right, we've got to get back down to this. We've got to win this title race. And, you know, they haven't lost a title race under Pep yet. I don't think they're going to now. I don't think they're going to start now. And they'll be and they'll want to win. They'll want to win to stop Jurgen Klopp winning. They'll want to win so they don't have their legacy as the team who've just won the treble, as the greatest club side ever, being sullied by some German with a silly beard who's, you know, just been a side character in this kind of era of Pep. You know, I mean, how many times have we all said in this podcast, it's not the Pep and Klopp era, it's the Pep era. And I'm a full subscriber of that regard to what happens this season. But, you know, I just don't want that. I don't want to see a red shirt lifting the Premier League. I don't want to see red ribbons on our trophy. They've taken the Carabao Cup away from us the last couple of years. I don't want it to happen to the Premier League as well. And I don't think it's going to. Because Liverpool could win 10 in a row, you know. But, you know, Liverpool could also do many, many things this season. You know, City could do many things this season, but I just have faith in us. I've got faith in us. Maybe it's because of the treble and we've seen this club do it all now. Mm. But I've just got that little bit of extra positivity and faith that I never had before. And, you know, if you try and tell those players that they're out of this, they're not going to say that. They're not going to believe that. I mean, look at Stones' celebration after his goal today. He was fired up. And that's not him being a City player, an ex-Everton player. That's him wanting to go out and win this title race. Mm-hmm. Just have a bit more faith. Yeah. If we lose against Arsenal, it's a different story, but we're not going to lose against Arsenal, hopefully. We're not going to lose against Arsenal. Just keep saying it and things will happen. Manifest it. We're going to win.
There's your positive note.
That's
all I wanted, guys. That's all I wanted. It did take 45 minutes, but we got from there in the end.
From the miserable one themselves.
Wonderful stuff. There'll be plenty more reactions to this game as usual as we go throughout the week. So make sure you are subscribed, you're hitting follow, etc., wherever you get your podcast from. But guys, that was a absolute pleasure. Intense, like the game itself. But Ollie, Joe and Ollie, thank you very much. Listeners, thank you very much. Until next time, we've been the City Report Podcast. We'll see you later. Make sure you're geared up for Man City's end of season running with McDelivery. Great food delivered right to your door. By using McDelivery, you won't miss a moment of City's crucial running, and just like Kevin De Bruyne, they deliver your order exactly where you want it. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. Are you in? At participating restaurants only, 18 and plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is, that's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van, unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.